Hello and welcome to Beyond Reproach. This is our summer break re-release series. This is Tux here to introduce the listener favorite story that Stephanie has ever told. Y'all voted on Instagram, and an entry by our friend Diana was chosen. The listener favorite story that Stephanie has ever told was the story of Wong Kim Ark and the Chinese Exclusion Act. Diana wrote in to say she chose the story because Stephanie's Wong Kim Ark story really caught me by surprise, because she told the story about someone like me, a pretty rare feeling. And these stories sure weren't taught to us in school, so I'm happy to hear a little representation on Beyond Reproach. Wong's story also gave me a little boost of joy, hope, and a sense of belonging, which all of us could use during these times. I think that this story was also one of my favorites, and for pretty similar reasons that Diana chose it. I think it's really good to hear stories about marginalized people in this country really taking control and making strides legally to make this country more inclusive for everyone, and making it possible for future generations of immigrants to come to this country and not be second-class citizens. Even though that's absolutely still happening today, Wong Kim Ark made America a better place. So I hope you guys enjoy this story, hearing it again, or maybe this is the first time you're hearing it. So I hope y'all enjoy. Thanks for tuning in, and check out the story of Wong Kim Ark.
Does the name Wong Kim Ark mean anything to you?
Wong Kim Ark. No, I can't say that it does.
For shame. For shame.
Is he from California in the 1880s?
Truly is, yes.
Oh, look at that.
My scandal this episode is twofold. I will explore the little-known landmark Supreme Court case, Wong Kim Ark versus the United States. It's arguably one of the most overlooked of civil rights cases in American history. It's really kind of shameful. Wong, who despite being born in San Francisco, was denied re-entry to the U.S. in 1895 after a trip to China solely because of his race.
That doesn't sound like the United States at all.
A bitch, yes. Could you imagine, like, as much as I fly, like, to get back to JFK and they're like, no black people allowed. Bitch, get out of my face.
Where am I supposed to go? I am from here.
Yeah. All of my things are here. What are you talking about? Things and family and friends and life.
My plants.
That's the first thing I say. My plants. That tracks. That sounds like me. So I will use Wong's scandal to talk about the Chinese Exclusion Act, the law that made it illegal for Chinese workers to come to the U.S. and for Chinese nationals already living here to ever become citizens.
Damn.
So this was the first and only major federal law that banned immigration based solely on nationality. Up until then, the country welcomed immigrants, all immigrants. Well, this law went into effect in 1882.
Wow.
Yeah. Immigration was open. Anyone could come here, yet we're pointing at the Chinese and saying, no, not you.
Yeah.
Literally anyone but you. Yeah. The Chinese Exclusion Act would be signed into law as Lady Liberty's torched hand sat in New York.
Wow.
Uh-huh. In Madison Square.
Okay. Yeah.
Back then, we didn't have the term anchor baby, which is fucked up.
Yeah.
So fucked up. It's like so derogatory. But we didn't have that term. They had another really fucked up derogatory term. Accidental citizen. Citizen by accident of birth. The accident, of course, was being born non-white in a white supremacist country. Go on.
It's just like an anchor baby essentially is like you had a baby on purpose so you could stay.
Oh, yes.
So calling it an accidental citizen would be like...
Because having babies is so fun.
Yeah. But like, yeah. I really do think that there's that mentality that... I mean, if you're somebody who's saying the words anchor baby...
Yeah, no, it's derogatory. It's never positive.
It's like you're saying that you got pregnant, carried a small human being around in your womb for 9 months, ejected it from your vagina...
Let it break free from your body.
And then raised it...
Yes.
Because America is so fucking awesome to immigrants. Yeah.
Yes, yes. Oh my God, it's so laughable. So before I dive into Wong's story and how he found himself barred from the country of his birth, I need to lay a very quick foundation about just like U.S.-Chinese relations. So did you know that there would be no United States without China? Like, no. None. Our country's relationship with them was instrumental in keeping our young republic afloat.
In what way?
Independence severed our ties with the British Empire and all their fancy trading partners. Huh. So we were on our own.
Yeah.
And we had to find new allies to trade with that weren't colonized.
Okay.
It was President Polk who was really interested in finding a quicker and cheaper route for Chinese trade. He had a plan to secure spices and teas and silks and porcelain and all, you know, the fancy shit the Tuxes of their day would need to live their best lives.
How dare you? But you're also
like,
accurate.
Yeah, right? You're like,
I like nice things, okay?
There's nothing wrong with that. Ain't mad at it. Step one was finding a fast, cheap way to import these goods. Because free trade at that time was like the full expression of liberty. Like that was the thing that made us feel free.
Yeah.
Imagine that, free trade with China. That was then though, you know, that was then. Step two was a plan to establish Chinese colonies in port cities here. They wanted to have these colonies so it would be an easy way to import Chinese labor, like Chinatowns.
Wow.
So that's okay. Why Chinatowns are always in port cities.
Wow.
Yeah, because they needed them.
I've never heard that
right?
before.
Right? Yes. So this is all by design. Like, this whole scandal really just, it opened my eyes in so many ways. And this is just, yeah, just the beginning. So these workers who would come here and live in these Chinese colonies, they would be used to develop the West Coast. Because the West Coast was giant and it was so resource rich, yet scarcely populated. You know, scarcely populated. There was few people there.
Sure. Because
it was like a wild area and it wasn't going to develop itself, that area.
Sure, yeah.
Because it's so big. We saw an opportunity to be financially independent through our trade relationship with China.
Yeah.
Who at the time, this was very convenient for us, at the time China was fighting with the British. So it was perfect for us to be like, yeah, fuck these guys.
Yeah. Yeah, we hate them too.
We hate them too. We hated them first.
Yeah.
But, you know, who's counting?
Yeah.
But also we hated them first. So the war in China created a lot of instability. Many citizens were trying to get out. They were fleeing poverty and violence. And it was easy to just hop a ship over here to the West Coast. According to the census in 1840, guess how many Chinese immigrants were living in the U.S.?
In 1840?
Yeah, in 1840. It's a low number.
Okay.
It's just for my own amusement.
500,000.
Okay, that's really high.
Oh.
Okay. I'm going to let you try again.
I'm thinking that's like really low.
It is low for today's... This is 1840.
Okay.
At the time, there were 17 million people in California. How many Chinese do you think were?
Man, I'm still thinking 500,000 is like a good number. 100,000.
Four. Correct. Four.
Not 4,000.
Four. Solitary four. There were four there. One ship came over.
What?
Yeah. But 12 years later, there was 20,000.
500,000.
Yeah. I'm like, that's why I'm like, I'm going to let you try again because you're going to be real embarrassed when I say four. So 12 years later, there are 20,000 Chinese immigrants working here. These workers first came to work the gold fields, to mine.
Uh-huh.
Gold was like a global phenomenon, like the fact that they were finding it in California and on the West Coast, everyone heard about it. Like the Mexicans who were living in California, they were there. Like people from Europe were coming over for it. People from Canada are coming down. So these Chinese people, they came to work. They were really good at finding gold for no like crazy reason other than the fact that like the stakes were higher.
Yeah.
They had to send money home to their families. They had to pay for their trip. Usually, like, their trips were financed by Chinese merchants, so they had to pay them back.
Okay, yeah.
So these financial pressures left them little choice other than to work for whatever they could work for whatever money, basically. So white laborers, they required a much higher salary because they had bargaining power, they had, like, political clout, they could negotiate better wages, whereas the Chinese were willing to take what they could, what they were offered. Therefore, many white workers came to resent their Chinese counterparts. At first, the Chinese were tolerated. They were seen as hardworking, generous, energetic people who had a strong moral code. But then things shift with the gold rush.
Uh-huh. They took our gold.
They took our gold. Basically, yes. That gold was for them, as the Cherokee Nation learned when it was found on their land. If you're like, what?
No.
Listen to episode 7 of season 1. I talk about the Trail of Tears when they found gold where the Cherokee were. Didn't end well.
Oh.
So As a result, Chinese workers were gradually forced to leave the mining areas because the white workers convinced the big mining outfits to not hire the Chinese.
Okay.
They're like, this is not for them. So they left these mining areas and they went into urban hubs such as San Francisco and LA because there was a threat of violence and there was real safety in numbers. They moved into these urban cities, often performing some of the dirtiest and like the hardest work. Because again, they had to make money it somehow. And this led to them being stereotyped as dirty, exotic, dangerous, and like fierce job competitors, which sounds familiar,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Sounds a little too familiar. So large numbers of unemployed Chinese miners were then recruited to build the Transcontinental Railroad that connected the Atlantic with the Pacific. The Chinese were reliable. They were strong. 9 out of the 10 workers on the railroad were Chinese.
Wow.
The others were Irish. Yeah. So Chinese would work for lower rates. So it shouldn't be shocking that they could only afford to live in like certain areas, like basically slums.
Yeah.
And they were called coolies. It's a racist slur for Asian laborers, basically.
Okay.
This is when the coolie problem became a thing.
Do you know what it stems from, or like what it meant?
It's,
not that we need to...
I mean, I looked into it, and it seems like it came from the islands. It's like almost like an indentured servant.
Okay.
Like you're paid a wage, but you're paid a very low wage.
Sure, okay.
It's more of like a class sort of thing, but yeah. This was racialized because sure. This was only for Asians.
Because it happened in America, so.
Correct. It was racialized because it happened in America.
Yeah.
Yes, that is true.
That's just what we
do. So undesirable as they were, these Chinese workers, they built one hell of a railroad. They cut through the Sierra Nevadas like butter. Like wow. They did it in half the time. It's crazy. Again, they were performing the dangerous, like the most dangerous jobs. And like yeah. They were just doing what they needed to do to survive in this country. And they connected the country. The bastards
yeah. Making
everything so good for us here. So when the railroad was complete, there was an official photo op. How many Chinese people do you think are pictured?
4.
0.
0, yeah. I was going to guess 0, and then I was like, yeah. Maybe they threw one nope. Or two in for good measure.
Nope, nope, nope. Mm. We, the whites, built this.
Yeah.
Eye roll. So... Despite needing these workers to make America literally what it is, California was still so bothered by Chinese presence in their state.
Yeah.
At the height, they were 20% of the population, the Chinese.
Okay.
And they
I
were
mean,
just,
that's significant. That's
it is, yeah, it is significant. It is significant.
Not that makes it okay to be resentful yeah. Of their presence, but...
Yeah, so the state passed a series of measures aimed at Chinese residents, ranging from requiring special licenses for Chinese businesses or workers, or just preventing their naturalization. Because everyone else, all the other immigrants, were able to become citizens at some point.
Okay.
By just being in the country through the process. But thankfully, this was illegal federally. California was trying to go rogue with it, but it was illegal federally because your man, Willie H. Seward.
Do you know, I hate click, to click. Interject here. Click, click. His home is a big... museum in my hometown.
As we should be.
The next
yeah.
time, if you ever go to Auburn with me at any point, we yeah. Should go there.
Yeah,
because
no,
we talk
should.
About him, or
a
I
lot.
Talk about him incessantly.
So Seward negotiated a really favorable treaty with China. Before then, there were all these treaties that were really unequal. Uh-huh. Like the ones that the Chinese had with the British were like crazy predatory. Like China got nothing. But this is like, he negotiated like a real treaty that protected the Chinese here.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's why what they were trying to do in California couldn't stand, because he put together a treaty that protected Chinese citizens. They granted them the right to free immigration so they could come and go as they want, and free travel within the U.S., amongst other things. Like they were able to be educated here.
Uh-huh.
And English people who wanted to go to China, they were able to be educated in China. Like it was reciprocal.
Sure.
Basically.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So this treaty was initially. This treaty
initially.
Was initially. This drink is really, really strong. And I've had like 2.5 sips and I'm just like, woo, my shirt's off. So this treaty was initially celebrated by industrial leaders because it ensured a steady flow of low cost Chinese immigrant labor. For all sorts of companies, not just the West Coast.
Okay.
So after building the railroads, the Chinese worked in the South on plantations. They worked in the North in factories.
Wow.
Yeah. Because slavery has been canceled.
Sure, yeah. So they need
cheap labor because they're just like...
And people that they can treat like dirt.
Correct. Yeah, because it's like, wait, no, white people have rights and we can't, you know, terrorize them. So many Chinese people here became entrepreneurs themselves, working in stores that serve their communities, like Wong Kim Ark's family. Although they only made up a small fraction of the immigrants federally, like within the whole country, they were the largest non-white group of newcomers, which made them the target of the usual fact-free panic that you would expect.
Yeah.
So they were...
fact-free.
I mean, it is fact-free,
no,
right?
No, I mean,
it is fact-free. Like, they bring disease, and they were going to degrade the culture and crime, and there's going to be all this white lady rape. Like, you know, the usual. Tale as old as time.
I was just going to say, yeah, tale, it's a broken record.
Song as old as rhyme.
Yes.
Ooh, barely even friends. No, let's go.
Literally, we're not friends. This is what we do in America when it comes to immigrants, especially immigrants that are not white.
It's like, where have I seen this before? Where? Some call the Chinese who came here to work and live peacefully like everyone else, they called them an unarmed invasion.
Jesus.
And those weren't just words, because armed vigilantes routinely attacked Chinese immigrants with no repercussions. They could just kill and lynch and do all sorts of things. And newspapers and politicians, they fan the flames of division, as they do. There were lynchings and massacres up and down the West Coast.
Holy shit.
Like,
people don't know
brutal,
about this.
Like, kids, women, for no reason other than that they're not white. So they also did this thing that they called expulsions.
Okay.
Where all the white people in the town would go to all the Asians in town and tell them that, well, they were given a choice. They could keep their businesses and their homes, or they can keep their lives. And they had 24 hours. So this happened all over the West Coast.
People don't talk about this shit because this is like they have just borrowed the playbook of like the South, essentially.
Exactly, yeah.
On the West Coast, too.
No, on the West Coast, yeah.
Wow.
So needless to say, the success of the treaty was short-lived. The tide was turning. Anti-Chinese sentiment continued to spread as white working men everywhere, because it's not just the West Coast now, like they're in the South, they're in the Northeast, they're everywhere. White working men targeted Chinese people as scapegoats, especially in the wake of the Depression of 1873. Because of all of this anti-Chinese sentiment, the U.S. passed their first ever immigration law. This is the Page Act of 1875, which barred the entry of Chinese women.
Women
who immigration officials perceived as immoral or likely to engage in prostitution.
What?
Before immigration was free, anyone could come here. You could just bring your whole family and come here. But the treaty was only for Chinese men to come over and work. So they don't want Chinese women to come here because they're all prostitutes. And then there's going to be babies. These accidental citizen babies all over.
Sure.
So, yeah. So our first immigration bill is like not only so racist, it's so sexist. Because every Chinese woman is just a prostitute. That's the only reason they'd be coming here. Yeah.
Fuck.
I know. It's so messed up. It's insane.
I just did a swear.
Oh, wow.
Get a gold star.
So for the people who are using Tux's swears as a drinking game, now you can take one sip.
I said the same swear twice.
That doesn't count. No, okay, it counts. Okay, two sips for you guys. Yes. Two sips. So Senator John F. Miller of California argued that Chinese workers were, quote, machine-like of obtuse nerve. Do you know what obtuse means? It means like less sensitive.
Yeah.
Okay. So they thought that... And this is so sick. They thought that Chinese people, that their nerves were further from their skin. Therefore, they could tolerate higher pain.
Fuck you.
Thank you.
What
yeah. So they were machine-like of obtuse nerve, little affected by heat or cold, wiry, sinewy, with muscles of iron, end quote. When I found this quote, I laughed. But then I was just like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Like, if I could talk to Senator Miller, I would tell him, like, just because you are a weak, racist sack of slop... doesn't mean that Chinese people are unaffected by cold, you dumb bitch.
Oh my God.
You know? Maybe think less about the Chinese and more about, like, what's wrong with your mind?
Yeah, just because your body looks like somebody poured loose mashed potatoes into a pair of nylons.
Yeah, truly. It's so, so gross. But yeah, I digress. So the Chinese must go became this like rallying cry. It was in all the newspapers. This was in the years that Wong spent growing up in San Francisco, thanks to stupids like Miller.
Stupids.
So I have stupids in all caps with two O's and N's and a T.
Yes.
Stupids. Thanks to stupids like Miller, California was overflowing with really racist propaganda and despicable like cartoons. I'll upload some of them to Instagram, but this shit is wild.
Yeah.
It's really crazy. So decades of xenophobia and racism became federal law in 1882 when President Chester A. Arthur signed the Chinese Exclusion Act, which barred Chinese laborers from entering the company and becoming naturalized American citizens. This law was the first time that the U.S. excluded a whole group of immigrants based solely on nationality. It created a new permanent class of aliens on racial lines, and it led to the first large-scale deportation in American history.
Wow. Good times.
Yeah. Cool, right? So the Chinese Exclusion Act, it lasted for 10 years, and then it was extended for another 10 years by the Geary Act, which also required that the Chinese carry identification certificates or face deportation. So they had to carry something on them at all times or they could be deported. Cool, right? Real cool.
Oh my God.
Yes, yes. Cool, cool.
They had to like sew it onto their coat.
No, not yet. But yes, basically. You know, sew onto their coat so it's always there and it's easy for them.
Yeah.
We're helping them. So later measures added other restrictions such as limiting their access to bail bonds in the courts and allowing entry only to like professionals, like teachers or students or diplomats and tourists. However, none of these really racist laws stopped Chinese immigrants from trying to build lives here, which is amazing. So 13 years after the Exclusion Act, Wong Kim Ark showed up on a boat in the port of San Francisco. Wong was 22 years old at the time. He was the son of parents from the Pearl River Delta, which is near Canton. He no doubt looked like every other Chinese man. But Wong was born in San Francisco. His parents had come to the country decades earlier to manage a grocery store in Chinatown in San Francisco. They had entered the U.S. long before federal immigration services had a concept such as illegal immigration. Everyone was just coming. So because all these laws had been changed, his parents were not allowed to become citizens under the racial laws. They feared very real vigilante violence.
Yeah.
So they fled with their son back to China in 1890. And this is when he was 17.
Okay.
But for Wong, San Francisco was his home. So
sure.
He returned to California just after a few months of being in China. He came back. And he was admitted without any problem. All of his papers were in order because he had to carry papers now.
Yeah.
So he became a restaurant cook. And thinking that he was free to travel like other Americans, he sailed to China in November of 1894 to see his family. He had taken the precaution of, before departing San Francisco, he prepared the now necessary ID document. It's like a one-page typed thing that has his photo in the middle. And then it has, it's signed by a notary. And you have to get three white San Francisco residents who all affirmed that he was born in the city and well known to him.
Jesus Christ.
How fucking demeaning.
Oh my God.
Could you imagine? Like having to go to your neighbor. It's like, I've known you for 17 years. Can you have like everyone in your family sign this document that I am born here just like you, but I'm just Chinese. Yeah.
Oh God.
I know. I feel like all of the moisture was just sucked. I'm going to have a drink.
This cocktail is so fucking strong. I don't know if it's the ridiculousness of this story or the strength of this cocktail, but I'm like,
this story is a lot. And I'm sipping small sips because I taste the power in it. And also it's so good.
Its nerves are under the skin. It's very strong in that way.
Oh man. So this document, this really gross document, in addition to all of this, it had to be signed by an inspector upon his departure from San Francisco. And yet, when he returned home, he ran into John H. Wise, the man in charge of customs at the time. Wise was a notorious racist. He was originally from Virginia, and he moved to California in the absence of black people. He decided that he can just terrorize Chinese. Seriously.
Jesus was just Christ.
Hated the Chinese because they were Chinese and not white, basically. So as customs chief, he ruled that Wong was not a citizen and thus immediately deportable under the new Exclusion Act.
But on what basis? He has all the documentation. Everything is in order. He, like, did...
The basis is that he's Chinese.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Yeah. Yeah, this guy thought he was real big. He had Wong arrested by a marshal and confined to a boat in the bay. And Wong wasn't having it. He did the most American thing he could do. He sued.
Good for him.
Yeah. And this is how you know he's a real one.
Yeah, you'd be like, oh, that sucks. Okay, I guess back to China.
Yeah. Oh, fuck that. No, yeah. I'm from here like you, bitch. Okay. I'm not going anywhere, Weiss. Like, wow. Yeah. So his lawyer argued that Wong was entitled to enter the country according to the 14th Amendment.
Do you know how he got a lawyer? Like, how was he able to?
Oh, yes, I do know.
Okay.
Because there was such a large population of Chinese people, there were these, like, immigrant rights groups that had popped up.
Okay.
Yeah. Because they had been there for 50 years.
Yeah. Like, it's like the ACLU is like, hey, I'm here for you if you need it. Yeah,
exactly. So they found him a lawyer because he was born here.
That's incredible.
Yeah. So his lawyer argued again that he was entitled to be here because he was born in this country and the 14th Amendment. I like to think that his lawyer just like read the 14th Amendment and like dropped the mic.
This is what our Constitution says.
Yeah.
Welcome to America.
Because it explicitly said that all people born or naturalized in the United States are United States citizens.
Yeah.
This amendment was one of the newly minted Reconstruction era ones that, that followed the 13th Amendment outlawing slavery. So despite... This is so maddening. Despite all of this, it had to go to the Supreme Court because he kept losing.
Who are these fucking judges?
They're white.
The Constitution. It's not hard.
I know.
This is what it says.
I know. So anti-immigrant forces, they had been gearing up for this fight. Like they wanted it for a while. And it seemed to them that Wong was like the perfect test case.
Okay.
So they argued that a quote, accident of birth couldn't confer citizenship on the grounds that Wong's quote education and political affiliations remained entirely alien to the United States, which is a fucking lie because he was born here and educated here for 17 years.
What, like, literally, garbage. What the fuck does garbage. That even mean?
Yeah, it means that he is still like under a subject of China just because he's Chinese, even though he was.
It's
literal garbage. But they thought that if they could get the Supreme Court to agree, countless American-born immigrants could be stripped of their rights, rounded up, and deported. They wanted to get rid of all of the Chinese, and they thought that, like, this case was the one. Like, they were really pushing it. But the Supreme Court sided with Wong.
Because they care about what the fucking Constitution says.
Well, no, definitely not. So, the aggressively white supremacist justices at the time, who just 2 years earlier had ruled that segregation was constitutional because black people were inferior, even they could not argue against the plain language of the 14th Amendment. It was clear if they interpreted it any differently, they would be forced to deny citizenship to millions of immigrants whose white skin made them American the moment they stepped off the boat.
So it's a double-edged sword. The language is too plain.
It's plain. All these English people, all these Dutch people, they're American because they are white once they come here. So if they said no immigrants, if you weren't born here, they couldn't become citizens.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they didn't do it because like, oh, it's wrong to discriminate. The language, like you said, was too plain. All or nothing. If you're born here, you are a citizen. The end. Unfortunately, Wong would never get to freely enjoy the benefits of his citizenship. He was still, because of these racist laws, required to show extra documentation, including the signatures of white people affirming his birthplace every single time he came and left the country. Every single time.
For the rest of his life.
Yeah, for the rest of his life. He is believed, it's like he kind of fell off. He's believed to have gone back to China for good, dying there sometime after World War II.
Wow, okay.
Because, I mean, why fucking bother? But despite Wong winning this nation-defining case, the Chinese Exclusion Act would not be repealed until 1943.
43?
Correct. So it was only repealed when the U.S. allied with China against the Japanese. So they weren't like, oh, we're doing this wrong thing. It's like, oh, we need the Chinese as an ally. And also we're busy interning the Japanese. It was because they needed Chinese support in the war.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. 61 years they were barred. The Chinese specifically.
Holy fucking shit.
Yeah. So the Chinese Exclusion Act started a new era in which the U.S. changed from a country that welcomed almost all immigrants to a gatekeeping one. And this legacy is still here with us. There are still many people who believe, as that turd John Wise did, that America should not have so many immigrants, especially non-white ones. However, the fact remains that Wong Kim Ark was the American who challenged the U.S. government to affirm birthright citizenship, and no one knows his name. He's the reason why anyone born here, regardless of their skin color, is a citizen automatically. Wow. Wong Kim Ark. Yes, he did this. Wow. So it's utterly shameful that we don't know his name. He was a hero who continued the long legacy of other patriots of color who stood up and said, what you're not going to do is this.
Yeah.
Believe that.
Wow.
What you're not going to do is this. And he made the country better for it. Yet people like him are too often left out of the history books, left out of the photos.
Yeah.
This racial exclusion law directly challenged our supposed foundational principles. So it's no wonder we weren't taught this in school.
I mean, we should.
Yeah.
We do need to.
It's critical to know our past so we stop repeating it or we stop being shocked by it when we see it.
But the people who write textbooks don't want to draw attention to these
kinds of
stories.
Whole race was banned and that this reflects our character as a nation and it reflects the way this country has developed. I mean, we're still in development. We are who we are as a nation because of Wong Kim Ark and the fact that we banned the Chinese for 61 years. And I don't think it's anything to be ashamed of. It's just history and it explains a lot.
I mean, it is something to be ashamed of, but it's like there's so many things that our country has done that are shameful.
But it just explains so much about what people are confused about.
Like, yeah.
This is just our history. It's plain. This is knowledge that we all have access to with the internet now. I heard this quote on a podcast once that maybe it's like an Irish proverb, but the thing about the past is that it's not the past.
Yeah.
It's right here with us.
I mean, literally and figuratively in the United States, we've just traded one group for another.
Exactly.
If it's not the Chinese,
it's
black
someone
people.
Else.
If it's not black people, it's Mexican-Americans. If it's
white
not
group.
If it's not Mexicans, it's Muslims.
Yeah, like, exactly. So I encourage everyone listening who wants to learn more about Wong Kim Ark, and you should, that you watch this documentary on PBS. It's called The Chinese Exclusion Act. It's part of PBS's American Experience series. It's really, really good. I got the bulk of my information from this documentary, but it is a lot.
Yeah.
Like the speed at which like contemporary things like hit you in the face like bricks, it's hard.
Yeah.
But it's really necessary. It's almost 2 hours long, but it's so, so good.
I mean,
it's so good. Like, watch it, drink water, stretch, moisturize, cry if you need to, but like, watch it because it's so important and it explains everything.
Yeah. Make yourself a Martinez and saddle up.
Exactly. Exactly. So, the end.
Take Lizzo breaks like we did in the last episode if you need to.
Oh, I took many Lizzo breaks watching this documentary.
These things are things that we should know.
Yes.
But we
don't. Should have been known.
Yeah. Yeah.
But here we are.
Damn.
All right. Now I can drink.
Yeah. It's hard going first because you can't drink.
No.
But however.
What?
However.
However.
Then you get to sit back and relax and just sip away.
Oh, yes.
I would argue going second is harder because you want to drink the whole time.
Yeah.
And then by the time you get to your story, you're like, oh, fuck, now I'm drunk.
Yes. Correct. Yes. Yeah. Every single time it's like, oh.
Wait a minute. Alcohol does what to me?
Yeah. Now I can let my gut out
and
relax and drink and have fun.
Well, I'm about to tighten my Spanx.
Beyond Reproach is proudly recorded in Bushwick, Brooklyn. New episodes are released the first and third Monday of every month. Please note that we are not historians. We are just a couple of drunks who never shut up and love history. Full list of all source information can be found in the show notes on our website. Please take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe. Written reviews are especially important. If you like us, please do one of two things. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or send this episode to a friend, family member, or someone you think would be into it. Don't forget to follow us on social media. Make sure you follow us on Instagram because we post our cocktail recipes the Thursday before each full episode. Please drink along with us if you are not driving. We also have a shop at beyondreproachpod.com. Get your merch, brand yourselves. We are on Patreon if anyone would love to show us some love and throw us some nickels to support the production of our show.